Chris Mamalelis from Selly Services. I think I know at least two or three of you, maybe more. Filling in for Sam because he's traveling this week. So I'm going to go through this COVID-19 webinar here and some of the stuff you may already know, but maybe hopefully there's some things that will be you'll be able to get out of this. So during this webinar, we're going to cover. Oops.
Hello?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So the three things we'll cover are the the three modules that we'll cover during this webinar are the COVID-19 plan implementation. We'll talk about OSHA regulations and enforcement and workers' compensation and California updates. So there's a couple of things with this COVID-19, COVID response plan, I guess you can call it. Some of you, well, whoever's our client should have already gotten yours via email from us. And I know I've seen some others floating around as I've gone to different dealerships, but I think by now everybody should have a COVID response plan. And if you don't have one, feel free to email either Sam or myself afterwards, and we could work something out. Sam's email is sam@sellyservices.com, and mine is chris@sellyservices.com. And by the way, in the chat, I heard Holland telling everybody that you can put your questions in the chat because I think everybody's muted. But you can do that in the chat, and you can also email if that's easier too. So just make sure we don't lose anything here in the chat. So we'll go through the plan, and then we'll talk about the checklist, the COVID checklist. Let's see here. So the COVID-19 plan has different parts of it. The one that we have put out is 31 pages long, so it's like pretty extensive. It's going to cover executive team action items, COVID-19 overview and workplace assessment, a training summary. There's different types of training depending on if you're a technician or a salesperson or custodial staff or in the business office. It'll provide a training summary, cleaning protocols and automobile sanitizing, physical distancing and traveling restrictions. And then there's some appendices that we'll go through at the end, which are tools that you can use to implement this COVID-19 response plan. So as far as management, the plan is 30 pages long. The plan's got to identify who is the executive team, which is basically the managers of the dealership that are going to implement this plan and be responsible that it's followed. So there's some blank spaces where you can put the general manager's name, the service manager's name, the parts manager's name, business manager's name, and so on. And then the plan should be posted. It should be distributed to all employees. You know, it's 31 pages long, so I don't think you want to print out, if you have 75 employees, you don't want to print out 31 pages for every 75 employees. So you can post it up on the notice board. The last page of the plan is an employee acknowledgement. So you do need to get everybody's signature saying that they've read the plan and understand it, and then just keep that last page in your files, in your HR files. So we suggest putting it on the employee notice board, so, you know, next to the labor law poster, so presumably everybody has a chance to see it that way. But you could also distribute it via email to all your employees, or I don't think you want to print it out and send it out with everybody's paycheck stub, but you can, you know, I'm sure everybody's got an email, you can forward it to everybody's email. And just have them print out the last page and sign it and send it back to you. There's also part of that plan is the COVID checklist, which is a bunch of items which we'll look at towards the end of the presentation that are best practices recommended by the CDC and OSHA, which you can use as a tool to make sure you're doing everything you can to prevent the spread of this virus. And that checklist, as it's completed, you know, you guys should complete that checklist and then post that up on the employee notice board as well. So whenever there's any kind of hazard, there's a hierarchy of controls that you should use to mitigate that hazard. So we're using COVID as the hazard of the hazard that we're going through right now. But I mean, this goes for any kind of hazard. So you want to first eliminate the hazard if possible. So obviously you can't eliminate COVID. You want to digitize communication, which means it reduces the interaction between employees and customers. So the less interaction you have, like hand-to-hand or, you know, handshaking and things like that, if you can digitize it, it reduces your risk. So digitizing means sending emails, for instance, or with customers paying, you take credit card, you don't hand over cash and things like that. Also, engineering controls would be the next step. Engineering controls would be an example of engineering control would be like a sneeze guard between the cashier and the customer paying. It's something that's put in place to stop the spread. And administrative controls would be something like setting up some type of procedure or rule to prevent something from happening. And then, of course, PPE is the last step. If you can't do any of those other things, PPE like face mask, for instance, gloves, things of that nature, is considered PPE, personal protective equipment. So there's a risk a pyramid. And you guys fall, as a car dealership, fall in the medium range of this hierarchy here. Very high, of course, is healthcare and morgue workers that collect and handle specimens. Of course, they have a high risk or high chance of getting infected with whatever they're handling. The second tier down would be healthcare delivery and support and medical transport. They don't actually do the patient care, but they're just like there in the hospital or in the clinic moving people around. The medium risk would be people like you guys or a grocery store, for instance, where they have contact with the general public and they see a lot of people throughout the day. And then the lower risk people would be somebody working in a cubicle by themselves or working from home. Obviously, they have minimal contact with other people. Different jurisdictions have different enforcement, I guess you could say, or mitigation of this particular pandemic. So if you're in a rural area, they might be a little more relaxed. The Bay Area, I think, has the highest control. So as an example, I think now everybody's able to sell cars from the showroom, but you guys weren't able to sell out of a showroom for a little bit of time, depending on which part of the California you were in. San Diego is an example. They make every employee that comes into work has to get a mandatory temperature check. And then certain counties like LA County and Santa Barbara County, as an example, require face masks at essential businesses, and the car dealership is considered an essential business. The shop is, at least. So I know Orange County just recently said you don't have to wear face masks in a public setting, but you know, these things change almost weekly, you could say, in some instances. This is a good illustration here of how the COVID can be spread and how masks help reduce the spread or minimize the spread pretty drastically between people. So the top picture, you'll see the girl that's sneezing and she doesn't have a face mask, and those little droplets carry the COVID virus in them. So if she's not wearing a mask, those droplets can spread out quite a distance. That's why this 6 feet social distancing is very key. So a single sneeze can release up to 300,000 droplets and travel 200 miles an hour. So you're not going to be able to dodge these droplets if somebody sneezes in your face, like my son likes to do all the time. The down below that, you'll see the girls wearing the face mask, and there's still some droplets that can go through the mask because, you know, they're not completely impermeable. But you can see the risk is much less, and then especially when somebody else is wearing a mask, you greatly increase your chances of not getting sick. There's something called a phone application or CDC phone application or an app, which you can download on your phone. And if you basically just search CDC COVID app and it'll pop up, it's got some, I don't know if some of you may have already tried this, but it's got like a 6 or 7 questions that you can answer on your app. And then depending on what your answers are, it'll tell you if you should go into work or if you should quarantine yourself. So it just basically goes through the recognized symptoms. And I think by now everybody knows what the symptoms of COVID are. Of course, there's fever or chills. You can get mild or moderate difficulty in breathing. There's people sometimes lose their sense of smell or taste and their appetite. You can get a sore throat. Some people may get vomiting or diarrhea and body aches. And then, of course, there's a lot of people that are asymptomatic that don't even know they have it. So I guess those are, in a way, they're lucky they don't have these symptoms, but they are at the same time spreading the disease without knowing it. You should call 911 in certain cases. Obviously, if you have severe constant chest pain or pressure, extreme difficulty breathing, severe constant lightheadedness, and disorientation or unresponsiveness. Obviously, I don't think you'll be calling if you're unresponsive, but hopefully somebody notices that and calls for you. The vulnerable populations for COVID, people that are older than 65, if you have moderate to severe asthma, you are vulnerable to this. If you've had kidney failure, if you're extremely obese, pregnant, you have diabetes with complications, or if you're immunosuppressed, you're the high risk at contracting COVID. It'll be harder for you to fight it off. So there's some workplace guidelines, of course, that you should go through. You want to distribute employee-specific training, which the COVID response plan has in it. Provide PPE like gloves, face masks. I think most people seem to have their own face mask, but you're supposed to provide those. And, of course, enforce the social distancing, the 6 feet separation between people. And I know a lot of you probably already have this, but putting those little stickers on the ground showing, you know, what 6 feet is away from the counter, and then the next person in line should be 6 feet behind that. And you probably see that at, you know, Trader Joe's and Costco and a bunch of different places you go to. And those plexiglass shields that are between the cashier, for instance, or the service advisor and the customer that comes up. Ventilation is very important, too. So fresh air minimizes the spread of COVID. So you want to make sure through your facility manager or your building manager that your HVAC system is working at maximum capacity, and also that the filters have been changed out, and the MERV 16 filter is what is a good filter, is a recommended filter for that. And restrooms, which, you know, a lot of things happen in the restroom. You want there to be negative air pressure in the restroom, which means there's a fan that sucks the air out of it. When you open the door into the hallway, the air from the restroom, it doesn't escape out into the hallway. More about restrooms here. Doors should have restrooms that have multi-stall should be able to be, the doors for those stalls should be able to be opened and closed without touching the handles if possible. Don't want a bunch of different people handling a metal handle. Of course, metal is the virus lives up to 72 hours on metal. So of course you don't want people touching that. If it's a single restroom, there should be signage, and you should have, of course, paper towels and trash cans. I think every restroom has that, but sometimes the paper towels run out. So, you know, got to make sure they're stocked all the time. If you have toilet lids, they should be closed before flushing. The reason for that is when you flush, there can be some droplets that fly out of the toilet. And if it lands on your pant leg or your anywhere on you, and then you touch it, there could be COVID virus on it. And without getting too graphic, you're not going to infect yourself with your own fluids. But, you know, if you're in a situation where somebody else didn't flush the toilet, I guess, and you flush the toilet, then you're at risk. And you should place signs asking employees to wash their hands before and after using the restroom. Like we said, paper towels should be in the restroom. Something that I didn't know about until I listened to Sam do this presentation the last time he did it is to disconnect or tape off the air hand dryers, because the COVID virus is airborne, and if there's some droplets that get in there, or if it's just, you know, say somebody had recently sneezed in the area of that air dryer, and then the next person comes in and uses it, the virus can theoretically be in that air dryer and blow out onto your hand. So what you think are your clean hands now have COVID virus on them. So try to minimize the use or reduce the use of the hand air dryers. And I think a lot of places do this anyway, but your restrooms and high traffic areas should be disinfected pretty often, you know, every 30 or 45 minutes or maybe an hour at the most, to make sure that, you know, 30 people go through there. There's a chance somebody had COVID and then they touched the handle. Somebody else touches the handle. Now you've spread the disease. And of course, make sure all your common areas have hand washing stations or hand sanitizing stations. Now, as far as management training, the manager should be communicating with their employees regarding developing circumstances. So somebody should be monitoring that CDC website daily because they update it all the time, and there may be some new guidance that they send out. The manager should be looking at the workplace for compliance and documenting and correcting deficiencies. That's where the checklist comes in handy. Of course, you have to identify if you have an infected employee. You have to identify where they were, who they came in contact with, and what areas they may have used, and then make sure those places are cleaned. And if somebody has been had contact with that infected employee for more than 15 minutes at a distance of closer than 6 feet, then that person, you know, the person that was contacting that employee should be notified and tell them to go get a test to see if they got anything. Not just somebody just coming in, you know, within a minute, just spending a minute or two with an infected employee. That's not considered as high of a risk. It's if you spend 15 minutes or more, because there's a greater chance of transmission. And then, of course, you have to follow the guidelines provided and to prevent the spread of this COVID virus and isolate those employees. So isolating the employee means if somebody comes to you and says, hey, I found out I have COVID, or I think I might have COVID, then you've got to tell them to go to an isolated area while you call the proper authorities, the county and the other people, and make sure they're not coming in contact with somebody else. Employee training, that's a little bit different from the manager's training. They should know what the how to prevent COVID, what the symptoms are, who the vulnerable populations are. They should do self-screening prior to entering the facility, which is on that COVID app. It's like six or seven questions where they answer yes, no, yes, or no. And, you know, for instance, it'll say, do you have a sore throat, yes or no? And so they answer those questions. At the end of that, the app will tell you go into work or not go into work. And they should know about the importance of not coming into work if they have any symptoms at all, because, I mean, there's enough people that are asymptomatic, but then if you have people that are symptomatic and they still come to work, that's how that the virus spreads so quickly. Now, if employee tests positive for COVID-19, this part is a little, there's been some back and forth on this because people say, oh, it's a HIPAA violation if you tell people somebody got COVID. But this is a strange situation. It's not something that happens every year, every couple of years. This is a pandemic, which is not very common. And during pandemics, a lot of rules go out the window. So including, I don't want to say HIPAA rules go out the window. You should always contact your lawyer. But if somebody has COVID, then you have to make sure that it doesn't get spread. And if it might take telling somebody that, hey, the guy that you were just talking to for 15 minutes tested positive, so you should go get tested. You telling the coworker that the guy he was talking to had COVID would likely not be considered a HIPAA violation, because you're helping keep your workplace safe, so it could be overlooked. Of course, any individuals working with somebody or that get COVID should be isolated and follow social distancing rules. The general manager should be notified. Employees that test positive should be away from work for at least 14 days. They should follow their doctor's orders, follow the CDC guidelines. And then when they do return to work, there should be a protocol for that. And that would be in conjunction with your doctor and the CDC, the CDC guidelines plus what your doctor says. Now, somebody does not have COVID, but they're sick. You may not know if they have COVID or not until they get tested, obviously. So if somebody has similar symptoms, so somebody can still get a fever and not have COVID. It might be something due to something else. But if they have any symptoms similar to COVID, they should be sent home for at least 72 hours, which is 3 days. And they can come back to work if they've been symptom-free without medication for at least 72 hours. So, and of course you follow your doctor's orders on that too. And then for those 2 days prior to them getting sick, so before they show any symptoms, those 2 days that they were symptom free, you should try to trace with the help of them, obviously, where they were and who they came in contact with who they came in contact with. We're talking about for 15 minutes or more, in close proximity, within 6 feet. So if they just, you know, walked by somebody, that's not the end of the world. But if they were, say, for instance, went and ate lunch with somebody and they were closer than 6 feet, or they had a long discussion and they were 6 feet or closer, then you have to then make sure that those people were tested and they can go see a doctor to make sure they didn't get it. Like we said, asymptomatic people can carry the virus without developing any symptoms. I think that's the reason this thing is spreading so much. pre-symptomatic people who have been infected. Well, we already talked about that. Employees who have tested positive should stay in isolation for at least 10 days after the first sign of symptoms and have been symptom-free for at least 3 days without medication before coming to work. So you get a cough or let's say a fever, you have COVID, that's day one. So you're in isolation for 10 days, and then you have to be symptom-free for 3 days before you come back. So if they're symptom-free on day seven, and then they can come back as long as the doctor says that's okay, and they're not under any medication to keep their symptoms down, like they're not using Tylenol or something to keep their fever below 100.4. Now, there's something called a symptom review and temperature check. I don't know how many of you guys are doing this. From the dealerships I've been going to in the last 3 or 4 weeks, I'd say about half of them are doing this and half of them are not. But lawyers advise that employee temperature checks and symptoms checks should be done. So at the beginning of the day, when an employee comes in, they should get a little, you guys should have one of those infrared thermometers where you check everybody's temperature. And then there's like those 6 or 7 questions on the COVID app that should be answered. And if they are past those, then they should go to work. Otherwise, they should go home and isolate for 14 days. Some people say, well, this might be a HIPAA violation. I don't feel comfortable taking somebody's temperature. Or somebody says, I don't want my temperature taken because it's a HIPAA violation. There's something called a general duty clause that OSHA has, which requires that you maintain a safe workplace. So they may not have a specific regulation for the instance that we're talking about specifically here, this COVID, but they do say you have to maintain a safe workplace. And part of maintaining a safe workplace is making sure the people that have COVID don't come into your workplace. So this is one of those cases where the HIPAA can be, I don't know, ignored might be a strong word, but you should always talk to your lawyer, but you should still do these temperature checks. And these things should be documented. You don't document the actual temperature that they – so they say they got 101 fever when you documented the temperature. You don't write employee John Doe had a fever of 101, we sent him home. You just say was – and you'll see this on the COVID response plan. It'll have a list there. And instead of saying what the temperature is, you just – the question is the temperature above 100.4 or below 100.4? And then you mark accordingly what it is. So you're not actually recording the temperature. You're just saying if it's above or below 100.4. Now, as far as cleaning and disinfecting, you should use EPA-approved supplies and follow those directions on how to use them. So there is an EPA website where you can, because now everybody is manufacturing hand sanitizing gels and disinfectant sprays and cleaning stuff. So how do we know if this particular manufacturer is giving you snake oil or if they're giving you actual disinfectant? They should be on the EPA approved list. There's a website which we can give you later. High traffic areas should be cleaned more frequently than areas that are not high traffic. So door handles, for instance, high traffic. Make sure the PPE usage is in place. And employees and customers should provide janitorial staff access to areas that need to be cleaned. So if a janitor doesn't have a key for a certain area, then the manager should let him in to be able to clean it. Now, as far as the automobile, when an automobile is brought in for service, all the touch points should be sanitized before a tech starts working on the car. So if they're going to be working in the dash, then of course the door handles inside and outside should be sanitized, the steering wheel, any part that they're going to be taking off or putting on, all that stuff should be sanitized. They should wear a different set of gloves for each vehicle. So they're not using one set of gloves throughout the whole day. Between, just like a doctor changes their gloves between patients, that's what they should do with the cars. The windows should be lowered all the way down. And you should ask the customer to turn off their AC or before they drop the car off. And the reason for that is you want as much fresh air as possible in there. And you don't want the recirculation of the air inside the cabin because the COVID virus is airborne, like we said earlier, and it can recirculate through the vent system. And then the employee, the technician inside, can be exposed. Use covers for steering wheel, seats, floor mats, and gear shifts. Read the SDS for the COVID-19 listed disinfectants and use the PPE as prescribed. So if you're using a certain type of disinfectant, you should get a, or any type of disinfectant, there should be an SDS that comes along with it. And under Section 8 of the SDS, it'll tell you what is the personal protective equipment that should be used when using that particular disinfectant or cleaning solution. So it might say you have to use a certain type of gloves or wear a certain kind of clothing or something like that. Now, as far as appendices, this is that the latter part of the COVID prevention plan. There's A through J of appendices. A through D would be the employee-specific training guidelines. So it'd be like some guidelines for technicians, some guidelines for sales staff, for the different custodial staff, and so on. Then Appendix E will be the prevention and checklist, and also the posters. If you go to our website, by the way, celiservices.com, the first thing that pops up is a COVID, a bunch of different links that you can click on and print out either checklists or signs that have to be posted. Appendix F will give you the incident reporting response form. G will give you cleaning and sanitizing guidelines. H will give you symptom review and temperature scan log, which I was talking about a little bit earlier, where you can mark each employee whether they had a temperature above or below 100.4, and then what all their answers were to the questions. Contact form and an employee acknowledgement log. That's the page that everybody's got to sign and then send back to the HR department. So here's an example of the technician's training. So you can see it's like a couple pages long, and it's just giving them detailed information on how they're supposed to work on a car, what they're supposed to do before and after they work on the car, and what kind of PPE they should wear. Here's the checklist. I'm not going to read the entire checklist, but you can see it's pretty extensive. It's a three-page checklist, and it's a good tool to use to make sure you're doing everything you can to prevent the spread of COVID. I went backwards there. Appendix F, this is the incident and reporting form, which you can use. So if somebody did get COVID, you could use this form to document everything. This is the page where you fill in all the management's information, their name, their telephone number, and their email. And the employee acknowledgement form, this is a form that everybody should sign after they've read the COVID response plan. So like I said, it's 31 pages long, so maybe it doesn't get read in one shot, but it's definitely very thorough. So as of April 17, so this number's probably tripled or quadrupled by now, but as of April 17, Cal OSHA had received 1,500 complaints from employees, alleging failure to provide protection from the COVID-19 crisis. And you can probably Google some of these things. I know Walmart got sued by an employee's family that died. This was in Illinois, and I'm sure there's hundreds of other items that have gone on like that. That's why it's important to make sure you're following that checklist as closely as possible. And just to quickly review, when do you have to report to OSHA? So these are this is for California. I don't think we have anybody outside of California in this group here. So as far as California is concerned, you have 8 hours to report to OSHA if you have any fatality in the workplace, if you have any inpatient hospitalization for a work-related injury or illness, for anything other than medical observation or diagnostic testing, if you have an amputation like the loss of an eye or a finger, or serious and permanent disfigurement. And unless, of course, if it is a parts driver and they get injured or killed on a public street or highway or in a construction zone, then you don't have to report that to OSHA. But if it did happen on the workplace, on the work site, then you do. So like I said, it's 8 hours time frame. If you wait 9 hours or more, or 8 hours and 1 minute, it's a $5,000 fine. So it's important to make sure you, even if it's on the weekend or at night. So happens at 5 p.m. at the end of the day, don't wait till the next morning to report it. Report it within 8 hours of when it happened. As far as inpatient hospitalizations, you also have to report it. Actually, this is Fed OSHA guidelines here. So we can skip that part because Cal OSHA is more strict than Fed OSHA. Now, as far as OSHA regulations, OSHA requires personal protective equipment. So if something is, if a personal protective equipment is required, then OSHA says that the dealership or the business has to provide that personal protective equipment to the employee. So they shouldn't have to get their own. So you should have masks available for employees. If they ask you for one, you should give it to them. There's a hazard communications program, and this is for anybody that handles hazardous chemicals or works with hazardous chemicals. They have to have training once a year. You have to have safety data sheets for all the hazardous chemicals you have in your business. And have all the personal protective equipment that is needed for it. And the general duty clause, which we talked about a little bit at the beginning, it's a general clause. So some people say, oh, where's the OSHA regulation that says I have to do this particular thing when we tell them to do something specific? So there may not be an OSHA regulation that says specifically you have to do this particular item, but they do have a general duty clause, which is kind of like a catch-all. And it says, like we said at the beginning, employees have to furnish each place of employment with, they have to make sure that it's free from recognized hazards that are causing or likely to cause death or serious physical harm. So even if it's not something that OSHA made a specific regulation about, they do have this catch-all phrase here, or general duty clause they call it, which you can still get in trouble for if you're not following. Now, as far as workers' compensation with COVID, it's a little different, and this was signed in to, I don't know what they call it, I guess Gavin Newsom signed an order that said anything from March 19 through July 6, I believe it is, if somebody is an essential worker and they get COVID, it's considered a workers' comp claim. So what AOC to COE means is AOE stands for arising out of employment, and COE stands for course of employment. So before May 6, before this COVID thing came about, if you could get a workers' comp claim, you had to prove that the injury or illness was arising out of employment and was happened because of through the course of employment. So the injury has to be proven that it happened at work, not in, you know, on the weekend or at night. Now with COVID-19, it's changed. The burden has shifted to the employer to prove the exposure was not work-related. So now you have to prove that, you know, John Doe that got COVID, that works in the shop, didn't get it at work and got it at home when he went to a party or something like that. So this is hard to do, obviously, and that's why it's important that you keep that OSHA checklist, COVID checklist, you know, you follow it as closely as possible, because if you can say, hey, look, I've done all these things the CDC recommended, and I heard from so-and-so that this guy went to a party over the weekend where there was a bunch of people, nobody was wearing masks and so on, then you might have a claim. But otherwise, if you can't prove any of that, they're going to consider that they got it at work and it'll go on your workers' comp. And this is effective for the period of March 19 through July 5. So we're about halfway through that right now. So hopefully nobody gets COVID in between that, is, because that can be a pretty expensive hospital stay if they end up having to go to the hospital. Now, there's something here called temporary rebuttal presumption of an injury for employees' COVID-19 related injury. So illness. So if you wanted to say that this guy didn't get COVID at work, he got it at home, you have to show that the employee was directed to perform work at a location other than employee's home. Hold on a second. Sorry about that. I wasn't familiar with this slide. Sam, Alan, can you unmute Sam? I want him to see if he can explain this slide here, because I'm not familiar with this slide. Sam, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
This is the temporary rebuttal presumption slide.
So what has happened is that Governor Newsom signed an order that any employee who falls sick with COVID-19 will be eligible for workers' comp at the dealership. Only from March 19th to July 5th, this is applicable. After that, it becomes any other injury where the employee has to prove. So in this case, the employee was working for you, whether he was working at the dealership or working at the another location under your instructions. Second, after he started working, within 14 days, he tested positive or was diagnosed, and his condition of COVID-19 is diagnosed by a California licensed physician, and this employee is sick. So let's take an example. We had a client in San Diego where the employee was furloughed, and he went to Mexico, and about a month later or 6 weeks later, he passed away. This wouldn't apply because the California licensed physician was not there. And also the employee kind of felt sick more. There were a lot of other facts involved. But this checklist needs to be met in order for this claim. Yeah, go to the next slide. And there is another example here that your buzzer has gone away from 90 days to 30 days. So normally when you get an injury in the workers' comp, say the guy says, I hurt my back at work, you can challenge the injury for 90 days. So somebody come after 45 days and says he hurt his back while he was playing soccer, and you have investigated, you said we are declining the claim. You can decline the claim. But in the case of COVID, they have shortened the time in which you can reject the claim by saying it happened somewhere else. Say all his kids were sick, or his wife is a nurse who worked at the hospital and she gave it to it. So all those facts add up to what we call as rebuttable to the presumption of COVID at workplace. So anyway, we have a one-page checklist, and we can email to Allison, and she can share with you how to go through this. But the good news is that it's all going to end in 3 weeks. On July 5th, this will be gone.
All right. Thanks, Sam.
Yeah.
So, you know, just to be clear, you know, we're not lawyers. This is general guidance. For specific guidance for your particular location, you should contact your lawyer. And, you know, this information was, I guess this was put together back in 3-4 weeks ago. So a couple weeks ago, I guess. So this stuff may have changed. That's why it's important to make sure you keep up to date with the CDC guidelines. Check the website daily. They put the CDC.gov. They put their updates on there all the time. And we got, just to acknowledge that we got our COVID response plan was based off of guidance from OSHA, from the OSHA website. So I know that's a lot of information. It might be hard to concentrate and it's a little dry and it's the end of the day, but if you think of some questions or you think of some later, feel free to put them in the chat now, or you can email them to Sam or myself, sam@sellyservices.com or chris@sellyservices.com.
Hi, Chris, it's Alin. It looks like one question did come in.
Okay.
Oh, they're asking if you will email the presentation.
Okay, yeah. Just send the, should we just send it to, if you want, just email Sam and then he can reply back with it.
Okay. Well, I did send you the spreadsheet with everybody's email address. So you have everybody's email address that's at the meeting. So if you guys just want to send it out to everybody, but I have a question, in regards to this workers' comp thing. I have, an employee who is out sick. And she's had a fever. They've had a fever, and her doctor said that they wanted to test her to see if she has COVID. We haven't heard back, but you're saying that could become a workers' comp claim. And if that's the case, shouldn't she be going to a workers' comp doctor and not her own doctor?
Yeah. Well, is she considered an essential employee?
What do you mean?
Well, for instance, essential employee is somebody that is allowed to work during the shutdown. So mechanics, for instance, are an essential employee. Now, salespeople were not an essential employee.
No, she's an admin. So she's not a salesperson. She's not a technician. She works for the cashier. Works in the service department as a cashier, but she is not not a technician.
Let me Sam. If Sam's still there, let me unmute him and he can answer that. I don't want to say something wrong.
Yes, Allison, for your question, remember one of the things we said in the presentation, that this employee has to be diagnosed by a California licensed physician.
Yes, she did.
Test positive to the doctor.
It will be considered a workers' comp claim
if it happened within 14 days of her starting to work for you.
And
you do not have any other fact to rebut this presumption.
For example,
if everybody at home, she lives with three members of the family, all the members of the family are sick,
then
you can say she got it from home, and you have rebut the presumption.
I would
consider you very, urge you very seriously to contact your broker, your workers' compensation insurance carrier, on how to place this case.
Okay.
And one more last thing on that. So anybody who's sick with COVID, we all know has to get 2 weeks of paid vacation under federal law.
Right.
Yes.
So if she's down for 4 weeks, hypothetically,
then the first 2 weeks comes from the vacation,
and then the temporary disability under the workers' comp kicks in.
So
it's a little complicated for me to explain to you. I have a one-page memo. I will email it to you,
and
I would like you to discuss this matter with your workers. All insurance brokers, insurance companies know of this
California law.
A directive by Gavin Newsom, Governor Newsom.
Okay. We have a couple of more questions. Can you see the questions, Chris?
Yeah, it says, are we required or just recommended to use the symptoms checklist and temperature taking? That's from Patty. You are required to, this falls under the general duty clause. So, you know, if you're not doing it and somebody gets sick, OSHA can say, come to you and say, why weren't you doing this? So, in a way, you're required to do it or to take preventive measures. So if you're not doing that, then maybe you need to show some other way that you're preventing somebody from sick, somebody that's sick getting into your workplace. And
holy smokes, okay.
Sam, do you have anything to add to that? Was that a...
Yes, I mean, the CDC is not a rulemaking body. CDC is merely guidance. They cannot make laws that can be enforced at the workplace. OSHA has a law which says you are required to provide employees a safe workplace and protect them from all hazards. So by taking the symptom check of employees coming in, you're protecting all the other employees at the place, because this is a highly, highly contagious disease with a high degree of morbidity. So that is why OSHA can enforce you to provide. So let me give you an example. In New Jersey, they wrote a ticket, a citation to a workplace of where three or four employees all got sick, saying, what, you did not take enough preventive measures to provide PPE in training and protection to employees.
It was not
an automobile dealership. And that's the point I just want to make.
But we
recommend do the best in the recommendations from CDC. If you have followed, then you will at least meet the step or threshold that you have done all you can to protect your employees at the workplace.
So Patty sent a follow-up and said, so do you have to do both? Do you have to do both the checklist and the temperature taking, or can you do one or the other?
The recommendation from CNCDA, California New Car Dealers Association, said you should do the symptom check and the temperature scan. So we're just kind of relaying that issue from a legal lawyer, John Bogdan was, who recommended that in a way.
Okay, and then I do have another question. They're asking if a face shield is considered PPE acceptable for the workplace, or is it only the cloth mask that's acceptable?
In the CDC guidelines, do you want to answer that, Chris, or do you want me?
Well, what is the face shield? Are we talking about like a plastic
plexiglass face shield?
Like over the whole face?
Yes.
I mean, that's just as good as the cloth mask, I think. I mean, it's basically you're stopping a sneeze from the droplets from hitting somebody else. That's the whole point. So the cloth mask is not...
The cloth mask was better. It doesn't replace, because under the CDC guidelines on whatever literature we have reviewed, they have not said that the cloth mask can be substituted. So we will not say that face shield replaces the face mask. On the other hand, we have seen in certain circumstances employees doing both face mask and then a face shield, where what is happening, in the Chris showed you a slide where my wearing the mask is protecting you, and you're wearing a mask is protecting me. So if I'm wearing a mask, you're getting protected, but the shield is giving me an extra degree of protection from your sneeze. So it's like having a traveling sneeze guard. So consider that both the combination, the mask is to protect, my wearing the mask is to protect you, my wearing the face shield is to protect myself. So if you sneeze, it doesn't get in my eyes or my, you know, on my other parts of my skin. So, summarizing it, shield is not a substitute for face mask.
If somebody
is actually wear both, yes, we'll let them wear both.
Especially
when the 6 feet distance is compromised.
Okay.
Is that clear?
I'm sorry, some of this is not very clear.
From what you said, what I understand is just that. The plastic shield is to protect me, and the cloth is to protect you from me.
Yes. And I have a question for Mary. Is it mandatory to put acrylic shield to all advisors and cashiers?
Mary,
Chris, may I answer that?
Okay.
That's also part of under the general duty clause, so there's no like OSHA regulation that says that, but if you don't do it, then you have to say, why didn't you do it? You know, if you're forcing everybody to stay 6 feet away from the cashier and you can enforce that, then theoretically you're doing social distancing, so you don't have to have that. But in practice, that doesn't happen. So if you have the shield there, somebody can't come to you and say, hey, you know, your cashier sneezed on me and I got COVID. Now I'm going to sue you. So it's better to keep the shield there.
Mary, and that's a good answer, but I would like to embellish it a little bit.
Remember
when we talked about 6 feet distance and 15 minututes requirement for isolation requirement?
So when
an employee and a customer, hypothetically, or a custom employee is coming in contact for more than 15 minutes, so I'm standing with my service advisor for more than 15 minutes, and you cannot keep a 6 feet guideline, then the screen addresses that 6 feet issue.
You hear me?
So it becomes mandatory at all locations where your customers may be coming in contact with their employees for more than 15 minutes,
and
the distance is not available of 6 feet, then the plexiglass substitutes for the 6 feet distance.
Okay, does anybody else have any questions? I know I have everybody muted. So if you do have a question, I need you to use it in the chat, or you can email me and I can get it to them if you don't have their email. Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Hey, wait, somebody else. May we readdress the issue of workers' comp? I guess they want some more clarification on the workers' comp.
Are you talking about the May 6th through, or May 19th through July 6th order by Gavin Newsom?
The person that's asking the question is Patty, so I'm going to unmute her so that she can actually ask the question.
Okay,
I can address this with Patty very quickly.
Okay, well, Patty is unmuted. I don't know if she wants to ask something.
No, I can see her question. Do we need to send someone to our workers' comp doctors? The general rule is for any injury at the workplace, you should send the employee to your workers' comp doctor, right? So by this Governor Newsom directive that he signed on May 6th, which is valid till July 5th, another 3 weeks, if an employee got sick, then there is a presumption that he got the COVID at work. And between you and me, if he didn't get it at work, he is saying you consider this as a workers' comp. Yes, if an employee doesn't feel well or is coughing, fever, you send them to your workers' comp doctor. And if they are sick, then they should isolate themselves for the period till the time they get well. They will get the 2 weeks vacation under the federal guidelines. And if they're still sick thereafter, they will get the TD, temporary disability, under workers' comp. And if you get other facts to prove that everybody in their house was sick or whatever other facts, you just like you investigate any injury, investigate this case. And if you can rebut that presumption, then it is not a workers' comp. It becomes what we call as a healthcare or health insurance related problem and not on your workers' comp. Patty, I will send you a one-page checklist, which you will explain you a little better than what it is. And I'll also give you a phone number of an insurance adjuster who can call. But I would recommend you would call your workers' comp carrier for better guidance as well. Yes, the burden, in this case, burden of proof. That's a good word you use, Patty. The burden of proof normally shifts. Employee has to prove he sliced his hand in the shop while working in a car, and you show it. But in this case, the burden is on you to prove it didn't happen at work. Yes, very well said.
Okay. Any more questions?
Thank you, everybody. Stay safe.
Thank you very much.
Bye now.
Bye.
Thank you.
Stay safe, everybody.
Good night, everyone.